even 975 would be really impossible to live on in Alaska, but you've got to set the floor somewhere.
A minimum wage proposition clears an important hurdle. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, June 24th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, assessing the wildfire danger for the hillside in Anchorage.
There's always that concern that if there were a wildfire on the hillside, Anchorage has a very big problem.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
How do you get men to wear a life jacket when the fact is that 90% of those who die in boating accidents in Alaska are men? Well, most men won't listen to this message, but they might listen to you. So have them pledge to wear a life jacket every time they get in a boat. Every time. Have them fill out a Pledge to Live card at pledgetolive.org. That's pledgetolive.org. Make them promise so they make it back home. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
The Senate passed a key procedural hurdle to immigration reform this evening. Senators leading the debate on immigration have long argued that 70 votes would force the GOP-controlled House to take up the Senate version. The amendment that passed tonight fell 3 short of that threshold, but at 67, it cruised to passage. 15 Republicans voted for cloture, as did every Democrat. The Republican-written provision would send billions of dollars to the southern border. The money would pay for hundreds of miles of fencing, tens of thousands of new Border Patrol agents, and technology like drones to police illegal crossings. It's a sign that passage of the final bill in the Senate is guaranteed by the end of the week. Both Senators, Murkowski and Begich, signed onto it. The so-called Border Surge Amendment, labeled after the Iraqi troop surge, includes language that Alaska's fish processors sought. It allows them to continue recruiting foreign workers who come to Alaska on student visas. Attention will soon shift to the House, where Speaker John Boehner says he will not take up the Senate measure. Another ballot proposition has made it to the signature gathering phase. Today, Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell certified an initiative that would raise the minimum wage to $9.75 an hour. Right now, the state minimum wage is set at $7.75. The initiative would bump that up by a dollar in 2015 and then by another dollar the year after. It also would build in future increases by tying the minimum wage to Anchorage's Consumer Price Index. Ed Flanagan is one of 3 former labor commissioners spearheading the initiative. He describes the jump as modest and says you would need to make closer to $12 an hour to support a family in Alaska.
I know even $9.75 would be really impossible to live on in Alaska, but you've got to set the floor somewhere.
This isn't the first time that people have tried to raise the minimum wage through the initiative process. About a decade ago, a proposition that would have inflation-proofed the minimum wage was nearly on the ballot, but the legislature preempted that by passing a bill that did the same thing. But a year later, they rolled back that policy. Flanagan says that's one of the reasons they're trying to bring this legislation to a vote.
If we are successful in getting it passed in August of 2014, we would get both $1 raises and the first CPI adjustment before they could basically go in and undo any part of it.
The sponsors have until January to collect more than 30,000 signatures to get on next year's primary ballot. Weather forecasts across the state are calling for continued hot and dry weather, and fire danger statewide remains significant. 5 hotshot crews have been flown to Fairbanks from Oregon. 84 wildfires are currently burning across the state. Aircraft and smoke jumpers responded to the wind-stoked Village Creek fire, which grew to more than 100 acres Saturday. The Lime Creek fire has grown to nearly 132,000 acres. The fire is within a half mile of Lime Village, a small community of 27 residents on the upper Stony River, south of McGrath. Firefighters are also launching a concentrated attack on 3 lightning-caused fires near the village of Crooked Creek in the Middle Kuskokwim region. The fires are all within 2 miles of each other. Lightning also started several fires on national park and preserve land in the state. The National Park Service will only respond to the fires if they threaten structures or cultural sites. In the Fairbanks area, crews continue to make progress on the Canuti fire burning along China Hot Springs Road. The fire is 90% contained. No fires are burning near Anchorage, but officials worry about the potential for wildfires in or near the city. For more than a decade, the Anchorage Fire Department has been running FireWise, a national effort to help homeowners improve their property's chances of surviving a wildfire. But without additional grant funding, that program could end after this summer. APRN's Sarah Bernard reports.
Hello.
Good morning.
Jamie?
Yes.
And Justin, right?
Yes, sir.
Hi.
It's a sunny June morning, and Anchorage Fire Department Forester John C. is beginning a fire safety assessment. We're at Justin and Jamie Freeman's house in South Anchorage, not far from Rabbit Creek. There are a number of young hardwoods in the yard and plenty of fresh, damp grass. But the landscape here is drier than it seems. With so many Anchorage homes built within the boreal forest, a hot summer with little rain could turn into a big threat to lives and property.
Some things I see in the front here that look real good. The rock work is a real impervious, fire-resistant surface. And ferns, plants like that that are high moisture content, that's a real good thing to see.
With fire danger warnings across Alaska, C says it's important to recognize how susceptible Anchorage is to wildfire. When the combination of high winds and hot temperatures hit the city, a fire could engulf the forested hillside in an instant.
I actually did modeling, computer modeling of fire spread on the hillside. And I mean, we end up with a really major fire in one day, this time with these conditions we're having right now.
C wants to help homeowners protect against that threat. He says the FireWise program got started here partly thanks to the spruce bark beetle outbreak over the past few decades that turned millions of acres of white spruce into kindling.
There was a need to work with landowners to make their property FireWise so that it can withstand a wildland fire, basically. That's what the FireWise program is about. It's creating that defensible space around your home.
This morning, Justin and Jamie Freeman's home earns an A or A- on the FireWise scale. Still, C says, there's room for improvement. Sparks and embers can travel up to several miles ahead of a wildfire's core, so some of the biggest dangers come from the smallest things.
Just the little leaves that right here, if you can find them around everybody's home, little patches of leaves.
Or a wooden fence. C tells the Freemans that just propping open their wooden gate in the case of an evacuation could stop a fire from reaching their home.
Open your gate, block it open, so that fire can't travel through.
Well, and that's such an easy thing that when you say it, you think, gosh, that why wouldn't I think of that?
Right.
But I don't know that I would have, and we would have left. And
right.
The Freeman signed up for the FireWise inspection online. And overall, they say it was mostly for peace of mind.
There's always that concern that if there were a wildfire on the hillside, Anchorage has a very big problem. And we're kind of on at least the edge, if not the middle of that.
It was also for some financial help. A FireWise home inspection is free, and this summer, a cost-share tree removal program will pay homeowners 70% of the cost of removing problem trees, up to $2,000 per acre. But homeowners may not be able to take advantage of the program much longer. The FireWise program could be out of funding by December, and especially if temperatures keep rising, that's not good news.
We all like to think it can happen here in Anchorage, and it can. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow or next week, so we need to prepare.
The Anchorage Fire Department is working on securing additional grants to keep the program going. C says they should know more by September. And in the meantime, residents should stay alert. In Anchorage, I'm Sarah Bernard. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, memorializing the only World War II battle fought on U.S. and Alaskan soil.
There was a battle area, and they moved a lot. They took a lot of fire all throughout the Massacre Valley.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
While residents of Galena continue working to clean up and assess the damage to their homes from last month's flood, the community's businesses and schools are also evaluating what they've lost. KIYU's Jeremy Scott has more.
Businesses are experiencing mixed results when it comes to last month's flood damage. Crowley Fuel Manager Ed Pitka says his store, which isn't far off the river, took its shots but is up and functional.
Three spots got breached, but it's all fixed now. They're working on it now. There's one I'd find a truck rack, and there's probably about 3 foot of dirt right on the pumps there, so had to be shoveled out. I think it took a couple days to shovel it out, but we're slowly getting it back together. A rough estimate of damage is maybe 800,000 or more.
The store has held off from barging in any new fuel until all repairs and cleaning are complete, but Pitka says it already has enough to deliver to people for the rest of the summer. Other area businesses, though, haven't been as lucky. Bed and breakfasts are the preferred mode of lodging for guests of Galena and are a staple of the city's tourism industry. However, some have been moved off their foundations, while others have had to be completely gutted. Then there's Archie's Yukon Inn and Snack Bar. Agnes Sweetser explains the fate of the log structure.
This right here is the bar and the snack bar in the back, and they're out of business now. I understand that the floor in there caved, and it was, you know, all the way up there to the top.
Once known as Hobos, Archie's has long been the site of the town's annual 4th of July and Halloween bashes. The town's main employer, the school district, says it will be ready for action this fall. The Galena Interior Learning Academy campus sustained no flood damage and is currently serving as the town's shelter. Superintendent Chris Raiton says the Sidney C. Huntington School did take some minor bumps, but nothing unfixable.
The only thing that has to be done there is that water and sewer get pipes back into that building, so that utilidor between the city and the school needs to be fixed. If we have water and we have sewer, we can have school there.
SHS normally houses the district office, which has been moved during the downtime to the Interior Distance Education of Alaska office in Fairbanks. Raiton sent out a letter earlier this month to parents saying the district will be flexible with its infrastructure and logistics as it figures out where classes will be held.
So wait and see. But right now, we're planning on having school. No matter what, we'll be in the SHS building if we can be. If we can't be at the beginning of the school year, we would look at having a split shift at the boarding school with pre-K and 8 going in the morning and the afternoon and high school going in the afternoon and evening.
Reporting from Galena, I'm Jeremy Scott.
Government-subsidized senior public housing will go totally smoke-free in August. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation will implement no smoking rules in residents' apartments, forcing smokers outside to common areas. But some folks at Juneau's Mountain View Apartments are fighting back. KTOO's Rosemary Alexander has more.
60-year-old Ron Dean has smoked since he was 15. He comes from
long line smokers.
Dean is author of a petition protesting the new rules and signed by nearly half the residents at Mountain View. Even non-smokers added their name, including Korean Hong Yong Ju.
I cannot smoke, but smoke is freedom in the USA.
The Mountain View tenants say the smoking ban will violate their right to privacy in their homes. Common areas in AHFC facilities have been non-smoking for years. Now the agency is asking all residents in senior and disabled housing units to sign an addendum to their lease, saying they will abide by the policy and take their smokes outside. At Mountain View, that means to the front or back entrances.
It's kind of gnarly out here in the wintertime. I don't want to stand there in 50-mile-an-hour winds and try to smoke a cigarette.
The signatures of 31 of Mountain View's 69 residents have been sent to AHFC managers and board members. Operations Director Michael Courtney says he's already seen the petition.
As we get the comments back in, we'll certainly review them.
Courtney believes the comments will track the results of a 2010 survey sent to AHFC residents statewide. It indicates most would prefer to live in smoke-free housing. Colorful pie charts showing the results recently went up in the Mountain View lobby, along with the new policy and a picture of a man with a zipper-like scar down his chest. The caption, "Do your heart a favor, quit smoking." As we scan the pie charts, Catherine Ryan rolls out of her apartment in a wheelchair. She smoked most of her adult life, except when she was pregnant. It's her business, she says, and she doesn't believe the survey results are accurate.
Since I am a smoker, if I had gotten one, I would have absolutely filled it out.
Housing projects across the country have been implementing smoke-free policies in residents' apartments, including Cook Inlet Housing Authority in Anchorage. Public Housing Division Director Catherine Stone says one reason is the high cost of smoking from a health and safety issue.
We put in smoke heaters, all kinds of fans, and double insulated some of our elderly units where people have respiratory issues, but they're still exposed. You know, secondhand smoke just comes into the unit.
She says it costs an average of $500 to renovate an apartment between renters, unless a smoker has lived in it. Then it's nearly five times that. The residents have until the end of July to sign the lease addendum. Ron Dean hasn't signed yet. He hopes the petition will have some sway.
If you don't sign it, they don't say it, but everybody knows what the deal is, you're out.
Stone says if residents don't sign now, they will be asked to later on the anniversary of their lease.
It could be that when they come up on their annual, they choose not to live there anymore.
AHFC will help provide smoking cessation resources for smokers who want to continue living in their apartment. In Juneau, I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
A ribbon-cutting ceremony last week marked the beginning of a new bike share program in Fairbanks. KUAC's Emily Schwing reports.
By this time next year, locals and tourists alike may be commuting between the university and downtown Fairbanks on fluorescent green commuter bikes. John Stoneman is a founding member of a new bike share program known as Fair Bikes. He says visibility is key.
You could probably pick these bikes out from a mile away at least. That's part of the strategy because you want these bikes to be visible, both in terms of just creating, you know, visibility for us right now, but also long term. We want safety to be a main focus of these bikes.
By next summer, the bikes will be stationed at up to 25 locations along the College Road corridor. Stoneman says organizers are aiming for a program that's easy to use.
So everything here is geared to be simple, a commuter style bike that lends itself to easy operation, low maintenance, something somebody can pick up, bike around, drop off, and never have an issue with.
Members of the community can rent bikes for an hour up to a full day or more using a swipe card or a smartphone. Jennifer Eskridge is also a founding member of Fair Bikes. She says the program is privately funded.
A lot of bike share programs are done with municipalities and nonprofits, but they then struggle with funding sources. We don't want to do that. We want it to come available and stay available and be available based on the need of our community. So it'll be scalable based on our community's desires.
Three bikes have been purchased locally for Fair Bikes so far. Eskridge and John Stoneman will join partner Juliet Shepherd in showing off the bikes at various events all summer long.
So these three are for talking about. They're for looking at, for being at events. They're not necessarily for others to come and borrow and ride currently. So we'll launch that program next summer. This summer's all about feedback. What do people want? What do they like about it? What do they not like about it?
Eventually, 140 bikes will be available. They'll also be maintained at a local area bike shop. The group hasn't decided if the program will be available during the winter. In Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. The Alaska Nanook Commission reminds you that harassing polar bears or taking polar bears with cubs is not only illegal, but it is not part of Native traditions. Together with their management partners at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Alaska Nanook Commission has been working on developing a long-term polar bear deterrence plan to protect Alaska's villages from dangerous polar bear encounters. More at the AlaskaNanookCommission.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Nanook Commission, Alaska's people managing Alaska's resources.
A University of Alaska program is winning awards and recognition for its success in preparing students for careers in science, technology, engineering, and math. KNBA's Jacqueline Estes has more.
Oh,
About a dozen high school students from across Alaska sit in the grass outside the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Building at the University of Alaska Anchorage campus. Most are sanding pieces of styrofoam they're using to build model airplanes as part of the five-week College Prep Acceleration Academy, a program that prepares students for careers in science, technology, engineering, and math, or STEM. Bryant Plug, a 10th grader from Anchorage, is testing his team's plane.
I'm trying to test my airplane to see where I need to add or shift the weight of the cockpit in order for it to maximize the distance it can fly.
Aniki Miller of Talkeetna is tackling a problem with his team's model airplane.
Our horizontal stabilizer, which is the tail, is kind of constantly breaking, but we're getting that figured out.
In addition to hands-on projects like this one, the 10th grader is taking trigonometry, one of several college-level STEM courses open to the students. They also get to experience college life by living in the dorms and eating in the cafeteria. That's part of the Academy's appeal for Margaret Grace Betts of McCoryuk.
I'm really looking forward to going into college, and I felt like I need to be prepared enough to do that. And what I really like about this program is that you get to meet so many new people, and it's one of the best experiences I've ever had. It's amazing.
Inside, students are working or playing games on computers, quietly chatting or talking about possible solutions to problems with their planes. Flora Andrews of Anchorage will be a high school junior this fall. She says she's attending the academy to learn about career options.
I mainly applied for the ANSUP Academy because I wanted to get more information on an engineering career, which is what I want to do when I go to college. And I also want to get ahead for college when I apply.
The Acceleration Academy is put on by the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, or ANSEP, where Michael Bordikovsky is Chief Operating Officer. He says the 61 students in this year's academy are just a few of the 1,200 ANSEP has worked with since its founding in 1995. Bordikovsky says ANSEP began with a summer session for recent high school graduates, but now has programs for students from sixth grade on up to college graduates.
Acceleration Academy students is really just kind of the middle of the whole longitudinal opportunities that students have to work with ANSEP. So they're right in the middle of engaging with ANSEP, and our goal is to keep them here, coming back every summer throughout high school, taking college classes, and really learning the skills they need to be prepared for college.
Bordikovsky says 90% of the ANSEP students leave the program with higher test scores and with college credits under their belt. He says ANSEP is a model that will become the way education is done eventually.
We're really, I think, just in the infancy of getting started before. And hopefully the state, the country as a whole, recognizes the value in what we do. And someday, everything that we do will just be considered a natural stage or part of the normal education system. And so we're going to get there someday. I'm confident of that, hopefully in my lifetime.
Last month, the Ash Center for Democratic Governance and Innovation at Harvard's John F. Kennedy School of Government named ANSEP as one of the top 25 programs in this year's Innovations in Government Award competition. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
70 years ago, American forces recaptured the Aleutian island of Attu from the Japanese in the only ground battle fought on U.S. soil during the war. The fighting, which ended on May 30, 1943, took a heavy toll on both sides, but the battle is often forgotten by history books. Earlier this month, in an effort to remember both the soldiers and the 44 Unungan villagers who lost their homes on the island, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service installed a memorial on Attu. KUCB's Stephanie Joyce reports.
If the Battle of Attu is remembered for any one thing, it's the extreme weather U.S. troops faced on the island. It was snowy and windy, and more troops suffered cold-related injuries than battlefield ones. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service crew installing the memorial had better luck.
It was beautiful in Attu, and we got it done in 3 days.
Billy Pepper is captain of the Fish and Wildlife Service's research boat, the Tekla. He says the first step was finding somewhere to put the memorial.
We had an unexploded ordnance person with us to scan the area to make sure that there wasn't anything you were going to stick a shovel into that could blow you up, basically, and because that was a battle area. And they moved a lot. They took a lot of fire all throughout the Massacre Valley.
The crew eventually landed on a spot in the valley that the Tekla's chief scientist, Jeff Williams, says will give visitors a good view of the terrain that the soldiers battled.
It's just 2,000-foot mountains, and they had to scale up those and fight their ways up those mountains. It was really impressive, and it brought a lot home to being able to see that in that location.
Attu is uninhabited and only receives a few dozen visitors a year, so there won't be many people who get to see the memorial in person. But during the installation, Williams brought hundreds of visitors to the island through a ham radio broadcast.
I just let folks know that I would be on Attu and be able to make contact with them. And they get a card and they can say that they talked to someone on Attu at the 70th anniversary. So it's kind of an active thing. It's not a PowerPoint presentation afterwards. But it's so remote of a place, it's difficult to bring lots of people there. So that was my way of bringing it to people.
Williams says the best part of the 12-hour broadcast was when a veteran of the battle contacted him.
And he was on ADAC and MCHITCA and then ATU and flew out of the base right there at ATU later on.
Remember when you talked to him over the radio, his comment was, I wonder if the chow's any better than it was back then.
The chow's better, he said.
The Tekla's crew is also raising awareness about the 70th anniversary in other ways. After installing the memorial, they held a dedication ceremony led by Captain Pepper with an honor guard of veterans from the crew. The video of it is on YouTube.
Today, there are just a few of us gathered here on this remote island of Attu to dedicate the Battle of Attu interpretive site. It is our great hope that Attu will remain a peaceful sanctuary for wildlife, and that by learning from the past, we can avoid Attu ever being a place of war again.
Reporting in ADAC, I'm Stephanie Joyce.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Emily Schwing in Fairbanks, Jeremy Scott in Galena, Rosemarie Alexander in Juneau, Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage, and Stephanie Joyce in Unalaska. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau, Peter Granitz from Washington, D.C., and Sarah Bernard from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. Summer is a great time to schedule your child's checkup. This yearly visit lets you ask questions, track your child's growth, development, and overall health, and make sure your kids are up to date on their immunizations. Denali Kid Care and most insurance plans cover these visits, available from health care providers across Alaska. Students starting school in Alaska for the first time need a physical exam. So make your appointment for a well child checkup today. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.